Okay, so this is our last in our hip series, and today is the 24th of August. And this lesson comes from the Judith Stranz keynotes that she took in Esalen in 1972, but I'm playing with it. So we're throwing a few other things into this lesson, but it's called something along the lines of experiencing the hanging of the chest, skewering the spine from the hip joints. So the basic motion that we're going to be exploring is an oscillatory motion of the spine. So if you can imagine your spine from head all the way down to the tailbone, and we're going to be using the hips as a mechanism to push and pull the spine along its length, kind of oscillating, like if you could picture like pudding and you can get a vibration going in pudding or in jello. That's the idea, like jelly pudding, kind of bong, bong, bong. And you can really affect a lot of change in your system if you can learn how to use the legs and the hips to generate the oscillation, and you can stop interfering with the trunk, with the belly, with the chest, with the back, with the shoulders, with the jaw, with the head, all of that. So I think that's the real beauty of this lesson, and it's worth doing more than once because you'd be surprised at how much more fine-tuned you can get as you begin to experience this. So let's begin with the initial movement. Bend your knees and place your feet flat. If you have socks on, maybe you want to take them off. You'll get better traction, and it's kind of hot in here. So the first motion we're going to do is rocking the pelvis. So if you push through your feet a little bit, you can send your coccyx up in the air and your low back to the ground. And then release the push through the feet, and your pelvis will rock back to what we'll call its neutral place. So there's many ways to do this. What I don't want you to do is I don't want you to tighten up the buttocks. Let's do it poorly with that way. So can you do that? Can you tighten up your buttocks while you flatten your lower back and then release? Do that like 3 times. And you can see when you kick in the glutes like that, you're really bypassing the hip joint. You can push through your feet a little bit, but it's not quite the same. When you really squeeze the glutes together, it tends to take your hip joint and immobilize it. Okay, now try and keep your buttocks loose and do the same motion. You may fire off a little bit of abs, but that's really not the point of this lesson because we're going to go into more of an oscillation, but just more pushing through your feet. Yeah, that's it. Good. Let your legs go and let them long and relax a little bit. If you get tired during this lesson, it just means that you need to refine it a little more. So when you're faced with fatigue in any kind of a Feldenkrais lesson, it's best to just take a rest and kind of recalibrate and then go again. So even if I'm still cueing the movement, you take your rest as you need. Go ahead and bend your knees again. Let's do the opposite motion, which is to send the tailbone or the coccyx down into the floor, and your low back will lift. So you're rocking your pelvis sort of forward and your belly maybe is pushing out a little bit. If you feel, you can generate that movement a bit by pulling through the feet. So start to generate both movements by pushing through the feet to kind of make your lower back flatten, and pulling through the feet to rock the pelvis forward. So the pelvis begins to do this rocking. And we're going slow, so the movement really starts to be a big full movement in the pelvis of rocking it back and rocking it forward. And if you're not interfering with your neck and your jaw, you will feel that when your belly goes forward and your pelvis rocks forward, your chin will be pulled down to your chest. When you rock it backwards and the low back flattens, your chin will be thrust away from your chest. And pull it in and back and forth. And feel the head movement. Good. This is a really nice little movement to revisit Just this rocking of the pelvis and allowing the head to be free. Relax for a moment. Let your legs go up to the down to the floor. And I brought my skeleton with me. So we're going to look at him several times. So roll to your side and sit. And Patty, could you hold his legs like this? I'm going to put the skeleton in the position where the knees are bent. But if you look at the skeleton, basically we have a round thing at the top called the head, right? And we have a round thing down here, except that it's not fully round, called the pelvis. It's like a bowl. And then in between, we have all these movable things, right? So if I move the bowl back and forth, it's going to link up the chain. And then eventually, because this is round, anything round is going to rock and roll, unless we're interfering with it. So there's a couple ways of interfering. You could have a lot of jaw tension, you could have a lot of neck tension, and in that sense, when I flatten the lower back, I'm going to scoot the head up. And when I arch and rock the pelvis forward, the head's going to get dragged. And so you'll feel your hair doing this, and there will be very little rocking of your head. If you start to not interfere with that, you'll get a little rocking in the head. So let's all try the first way, which is the non-rocking of the head. So lay down for a moment. You can all do it yourself. If you put your thumb on your chest, like you know where that notch is, anywhere on the breastbone, and then place your forefinger on your chin. So it's almost like you create a stick between your chin and your sternum. You're going to keep that there to like so that you're not going to displace that. And bend your knees. So you've got somehow you're holding between your chin and your sternum or your breastbone. And you're going to just maintain that fixed distance. And go ahead and rock your pelvis. It's possible not to let the head rock when you fix that distance. And you're going to feel your hair is going to slide. And your whole head, instead of rocking, displacing, it's going to not rock, but it's going to slide or translate. Yeah? You feel? That's not necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes we use ourselves like that. For example, I'm just having a really weird example. But here's an example. What if the VW bug stalled and you have to pop it into first, right? And you're on a hill and someone like has to get it going to pop it into first. Remember the cars that used to have to do that? And you're in the back of the VW bug pushing the thing. And you don't have enough power and you're going to use your head now. You're going to use your arms and your head to push the car up the hill. You wouldn't want your head to rock a lot back and forth, right? You'd want to fix that, and you're going to thrust through your hips, and you're going to translate right out the top of your head because the head is going to be pushing the VW bug. So it's not always that we want rocking. Okay, let's go and do rocking now. So now don't let that distance be fixed. Release your chin, release your hand, and just allow the head to bob a little bit. You actually don't do it. It passively does it. It's a really interesting phenomenon about this head deal. And you're going to find in this lesson that it does it better and better and better. But where you place your head and the nature of your cervical curve determines how much your head rocks as well. So one of the cool things about this lesson is it actually improves the cervical curve. Yeah, good. Rest for a moment. You know, it's a lot of work on the legs, so you rest when you need to. Mm-hmm. We want to cultivate this movement so that it can become faster and lighter and easier. And the legs become the primary drive of the movement. So let's look at the skeleton again. How the legs become the primary drive is an interesting idea. So come to sit and gather around this guy. If this guy were an amputee, I'm going to make him an amputee for those of you on tape here, on computer. I'm just taking his hips off. Okay, we'll just take one hip off, right? Imagine that. That happens sometimes with cancer. They actually have to take the whole hip joint out. But it's still possible to rock the pelvis back and forth because what's here? Abdominals, right? You can still pull the pubic pubic symphysis up, right? And you can still flatten the lower back. And then you can still arch the back and send it that way. So you can do it proximally. Proximal is just a fancy word for the muscles that are closer into the center. But Moshe's idea in this lesson is that, like, let's shut down more of the proximal stuff because we're looking for change in the chest, the hanging of the chest. We're looking for freedom all in here. When you start to contract a lot, the abdominals, it tends to ride up all the way into the flexor system, and very few of us have good differentiation there. It's not necessary, but it tends to. So the idea is, why don't we just use the big muscles in the legs, and we will engage the ball of the hip joint right into that socket with a thrust, and the two balls will pong, pong, pong right in those hip joints, and then that will make the pelvis do this thing. Or then we pull. Have you ever heard of the muscle, the iliopsoas? Anyway, it's no matter, but that is the muscle that you use in the pull to rock the pelvis forward rather than the back extensors. So, at any rate, you don't need to know any of that. It's just maybe this gives you a good visual. You can see how these feed in, and the hips feed in really deep. The skeleton doesn't show it, but they are like sticks, and then they have this angulation with this big head right here. And so imagine your legs coming up, and then they feed in. And not only they feed in, they feed back. That's how the hip joint goes. It goes in and back. So it's imagine something coming in and sinking right into your center back. And so it's very central. And when you really learn where your hip joints are, it so unloads so many things and gives you so much power when you get really clear. So Moshe's idea is, well, let's do a bunch of the skewering stuff and maybe we'll get clear on our hip joints. So lie down. See if that helps just seeing the skeleton. Lie down.
So it's the psoas muscle that does the arching.
So the question is it the psoas muscle that does the arching of the back? And the answer is yes. If you can access it, yes. Yeah. So go back and back extensors and the quad, the rectus femoris part of the quad that inserts up here, and you'll get sore in the groin a little bit. Sometimes adductors will help pull too. Yeah. Quadratus magnus, what's that? Adductor magnus. Okay, let's go ahead and go again, just rocking the pelvis, letting the head remain free. And now that you've seen the skeleton, just see if you can visualize the hip joints deep within you. That's really good. So you're going back and forth, you're pulling and you're pushing, with only enough force that you need to do. You know, it doesn't have to be huge force. And then as you lighten up a little bit, you might find your rhythm gets quicker. So that it starts to be this kind of skewering thing, like a up and down, up and down, up and down, kind of a thingy. There's a little rocking of the pelvis and certainly rocking of the head, but the motion ends up being more towards the top of the head and the tailbone. Kind of like a jiggly kind of motion. And you need to put as much force as you can really start to feel your hip joints. Which one do you feel more clearly? Which foot is more clear for you? But rest for a moment. Put your legs down. As you lay here, which hip feels clearer? Maybe you have more sensation in the hip. It may be that it feels more connected. It may feel warmer. It may feel bigger. May feel more alive. You'll have one that you're drawn to. And we're usually drawn to the one that's clearer. Not always. Pain will draw us, for sure. And that may not be the one that's clear. Okay, spread your arms out, shoulder height, palms up. There you go. And bend your knees again. And in this position, just allow your chest to open up. Allow, I'm very muscular tonight, the pecs, you know, all that. Just allow the whole heart area to just open. Relax your jaw. And then begin to do your oscillatory motion with your pelvis and your legs. And just see that this is a different situation a little bit for the arms and the ribs and the chest. And make the motion so that you could be at a place where it's pleasurable and you'd want to continue it. So you have to decide how much force that is. Now, with your arms like this, does your head do something different? Or is it still freely rocking a little bit? Or does all that change? Can you inhibit your head from rocking? Just do something that doesn't let it rock, and now let it rock again. So it can be something as simple as like making the tongue tense. That can stop your head from rocking. It can be wrinkling up your eyebrows. That can stop the freedom of the head. And yet it's possible to wrinkle the eyebrows and still have a free head. Good. Relax. Let your legs go down. It's like possible to grimace and still be actually in a really good mood. Good. Let it all go. Rest your legs. So lots of looking at the skeleton tonight. So roll up to the side. Next movement we're going to do, I'm going to show you the skeleton from behind. So take a look at him. Come close so you can see. What we're going to do next is do something with the arms that's going to displace us off the center of the spine, off the spinous processes, these little nubs that stick out in the back. Anyone can feel them if you just feel your own spine in the back. That's what you're feeling, is these nubs, and they're called spinous processes. And we're going to displace ourselves to the ribs in between the spinous processes and the shoulder blade. There's actually ribs there. And of course, lovely muscles called rhomboids and all those other things we like massage. But to that place. And it's a very interesting place. Come closer because he doesn't show it too great. But the ribs actually have joints. Sometimes you don't think of the ribs as moving, but they actually have joints. Each rib has three places that it connects. And one of the places you can see, he's fused, but this is the vertebra right here, if I could lift that off. And you can see that how the rib passes right underneath that. That's actually a movable joint. It doesn't move a lot, but it has some slide in there. So when we bias ourselves and we weight bear here and we're skewering the spine, because we weight bear here, we have a chance of fixing the rib and differentiating that joint. It's really, you feel like, oh, it just feels like I'm giving myself a massage or whatever, but actually, biomechanically what's happening, sometimes it's neat to look at a skeleton and go, well, why would Moshe have you do that? And I believe, because I love analyzing his lessons, he's trying to get these guys to unlock, right, which is great. And then the shoulder blade gets to do something interesting too. It's fixed. And then the ribs, these ribs aren't completely fixed. The ribs will start to move a little bit too against the shoulder blade, which is not really what we usually do. We usually move, have the ribs steady and move the blade around, right? Steady ribs.
Shoulder blade's fixed because you're lying back.
The shoulder blade's fixed because you have weight on it. Yeah. Okay. So go back onto your back.
You said the ribs connect in three places?
They connect in three places. Yeah, you want to know the three. So, except for the floating ribs, they're an exception. These two guys down here are free and free. Those are the floating ribs. So the first place they connect is through cartilage with the front, right? And then they have a joint here at the transverse processi. And then each rib inside connects to upper and lower vertebral body. Yeah. So if it's rib 4, my gosh, this is not my anatomy here. I think rib 4 would connect to the transverse process of 4 and the body of 3 and 4. I think it's the one above. It might be the one below. Help me out. Huh? Oh, yeah. Yeah, ligaments for all those things. Okay, go on back to your back. And it seems like it's going to be complicated. It's not really complicated at all. Bring your knees up. And you're going to oscillate, and you're going to make a triangle with your arms, and you're going to put your hands up to the ceiling. So there's a triangle with your arms. Now, right away, what that's done is that's hands up to the ceiling, hands in front of you, like a prayer position, palm to palm, right? And right away, what that's done, can you feel that that's spread the area between the spinous processes, between the spine and the blades, right? The blades have kind of widened out there, so you have like more rib there. So you're going to oscillate a little bit there. Go ahead and just do your thing that you've been doing. When I say oscillate, that's using your legs. And what I'd like you to do is, without deforming the triangle, I want you to tilt the triangle a little bit to the right. That means the left shoulder blade is going to lift up a little bit, and you'll be resting on those right ribs, in between the right shoulder blade and the right spinous processes, on those, and oscillate there. So you're off-center a little bit, and you oscillate. So it's almost like you're giving yourself a massage on the right, near the right blade of the shoulder. Funny idea, huh? Yeah. Good. And when you need to rest, you put the arms down and then you'll do it again. That's good. Now, some people, when they're off-center, can't generate a straight line of oscillation. It's all wavy, right? Because, you know, we're not used to being in a twist. This is a twist. Maybe it's not your scoliotic twist, and so it's really sort of disorganized because it's not your habit. Try the other side if you haven't already. So tilt the triangle to the other side. The right shoulder blade will pick up a little bit, and you'll be really laying on those left ribs, somewhere near the left blade, and you'll oscillate over there. Is there a difference when you go to one side versus the other? You might need to rest. Put your arms down and just take a rest. Even to do this simple movement of taking a triangle and not deforming it, it's really actually kind of advanced for many people because it requires some ability to really move the chest and move the shoulder blades. So I thought tonight, because Moshe just assumes that everybody can do it, I thought we'd work a little on rollers. So let's roll to your side and just grab a roller. These are 4-inch by 36-inch Edifoam rollers for anybody who's listening to this. They're sort of the classic Feldenkrais roller that you'll find almost in every Feldenkrais practice. So what we're going to do is try and differentiate a little bit on the roller. You're going to lay on the roller completely. So just take your roller and sit on the end of it. And then just lay yourself back and keep your... You're going to have to lay so that your head's on it. I think we'll all fit on these. They're 36 inches, so you'll probably fit. And then, yeah, just kind of get it centrally. Now, not all portions of your spine will be on it because we have curves in our spine, right? So just really get your sense of where your curves are. But the back of your head, somewhere mid-back, and your sacrum, which is your lower, very lower... spine and into your pelvis should be resting on it. And you just ground your feet, your knees are bent, your feet are there. And put your hands down on either side with the palms on the floor. That will help with your balance. And then we're going to do a very simple motion of just letting the hip fall off to one side And if you let your left hip fall off a little bit, it'll start to catch your right shoulder blade. And then pop yourself up to the center of the roller again, and then let the right hip fall off and feel that roller start to catch the left shoulder blade. So there's nothing more to it than that. You're just going to go a little bit to the side, and you're looking for that shoulder blade to kind of lip off the roller and catch. So again, we're keeping our focus on the ribs in between the spinous processes and the blade. And your head will do something to counterbalance. When the left hip drops, if you roll your head a little bit to the right, it'll help your head keep on the roller. It'll probably still do that anyway. But maybe some of you weren't doing it. If your head rolls in the opposite direction to the dropping hip, it tends to help keep your head balanced and centered on the roller. And then start to be a little more sloppy about it, a little more relaxed, and just shifting. You're rolling the roller. Do you feel that the roller is rolling on the floor? And you're basically rolling the roller side to side. And if you're getting kind of all not sure about it, just think, oh, I'm just massaging my back. Like it's a rolling pin, and you're just massaging your back. That's nice. And you can go further. You can almost fall off of it. You can just start to play. As you get more comfortable, you can start to play with the roller. Let the legs be the primary thing that gets you back centered on the roller. It's a little push through the foot that gets you back centered. It's possible to do it with all proximal muscles, but we want to get like jelly pudding with the belly and the ribs, and so we want the legs to do most of it. Okay, to come off your roller, we're going to go back on, but let's take a break off of it. Just decide which way you want to fall off, and just cascade yourself off gently, and then the roller will scooch out to the side, and then just lay back. It's an interesting feeling after you've been on a roller like that. Sometimes it feels like you're in a gully, and you're wide, and you're flat. Just get a sense of being off the roller, and then elongate your legs and just rest. And see if now that you've had the roller give you some feedback, see if you have any more clarity of that place, those upper ribs that lie between the shoulder blade and the spine. Do you have any more clarity there? You feel broader in the back there, or fuller, or whatever your words are. There's a reason that those are muscles, if you've ever had a massage, you know, those rhomboids and stuff, you know, there's a reason that we all love massage there, because they work far too hard because of our postural inadequacies. So it's nice to not only give them a massage, but you're doing something that's actually going to change your posture at the same time. So it's like a two for one. Two for one special. Okay, let's get on our rollers again. If for anyone these rollers are too hard, you can use a blanket rolled up, like a wool blanket, something kind of firm. You can do it off a blanket. It's not quite as easy to roll, but it still works, and it's softer. Okay, let's do a change in arm position. Can you put your arms out to the side, palms up? And you can feel now that we have the roller under our back, that's quite a different stretch through the chest. It really opens the chest because we're draped over the roller, kind of like a dish towel drapes over the rod. We are like a dish towel draped over the roller. And put your feet where they're comfortable. And once again, begin exploring, rocking the pelvis, rocking the hips, a little as if you're going to fall off the roller to one side, letting the head counter rotate, so you'll be looking in the direction opposite the falling hip. or the descending hip. And because your arms are outstretched, it's going to give you a different sensation through the arms and through the chest. You feel how that becomes different. And you can go as slow as you please. If your arms start to go numb, you have to not put them so far directly out to the side. Maybe you need to negotiate at like a 45 degree angle, or you need to take a break and put palms down on the floor. Okay, everybody put palms down on the floor. And just feel how you are. And then let's make a triangle with the arms. So hands like prayer position up towards the ceiling. Now this is a little more dynamic because we don't have any arm stability, right? And can you just go a little bit back and forth with your hips and just let the triangle counterbalance a little bit as it needs to? And it's almost like you're ironing out that rib part. You're catching your ribs right there. That's what you're after. Yeah, it's somewhat strenuous now that we took the arms away. Come to center, and now just let the triangle go back and forth a little bit. Make a circle with your middle finger. See what that feels like. Now, relax the triangle. Put your arms overhead so that the elbows are bent and the knuckles are on the floor. Almost like a day at the beach. That's another place for your arms. So you should have some knuckle or thumb or something on the floor. Palms are up to the ceiling. And go back and forth again with your hips. Just roll your roller. Let your head counterbalance a little bit by rolling opposite the descending, the hip that's going backwards. The head rolls opposite. And again, feel the condition of the shoulder blades as you do that, and the area between the shoulder blades as you do this. And you can mess around with it and be sloppy with it if you want. It doesn't have to be super precise. You may get into some pressure points that just feel really good, like shiatsu massage. You know, that just the roller can really press and it hurts, but it hurts good. If anything hurts and it hurts bad, don't keep doing it. That's basically life advice. Bring your arms down to your side. And why don't you just let the roller slip out, just let your body roll off of it. Gently come down to the floor and just experience yourself on the floor. Maybe it feels like just a relief to be off a movable surface. Because when you're on a movable surface, there's a lot of activity that goes on because you don't want to fall. So now you're not on a movable surface, you're just on the floor. Everything's stable. Can you feel how you can relax into that stability? Okay, let's go back to the variation without the roller. So just go ahead and bend your knees. We made a triangle with the hands. We oscillated the pelvis, and you let the triangle go a little to the left or to the right. I don't care. You're going to do both ways. And you lift one shoulder blade as you do that so the triangle doesn't deform, and you oscillate. See if you have a little clearer. Go to one side and oscillate a little bit. See if you can now maybe do it, or maybe it's clearer. to be there. It's clearer. So once again, you're rocking the pelvis. Can you release the head? The head has a little bit of rocking too. And then when you're satisfied, you go to the other side or you take a rest. So you know the idea. Just go ahead and... There's differences from one side to the next because we all have a degree of scoliosis. And there's differences. It's your job to go, oh, something feels different. I don't know, it's logy over here. It's not, I can't even feel over here. Or wow, my leg's really working hard over here. Those are the kind of differences you want to pick up, right? Something different. You start on the gross level and then you fine-tune it. Or my head really moves on this side, but when I put the arms to the other side, my head hardly moves at all. Make sure you're resting when you need. Yeah, so much rolling other side. So maybe you roll on your side and you take a rest on your side. Everybody, rest on your side. It's a really neat place to feel the breathing in your lower back. When you go to your side and you put yourself a little bit in fetal position, it sometimes really can let your low back release. And sometimes this lesson has the lovely thing of releasing the low back, which frees the lower ribs, the ones that aren't connected to the front. And you really get the sense that your back can widely receive air and it can expand and be free. You roll onto your back again. We're going to now explore the ability of one hip to do the thrust or the oscillation. So let's use the left hip to be the hip we're going to explore. Bend both knees. Take your right foot or ankle and cross it over the left knee. And if you can, let the right knee hang out to the right. So it's not like a full cross, it's sort of how men might cross their legs. Sounds sexist to say that, but maybe it works. There you go. Okay, so in that situation, I want you to oscillate, and you're going to rock your body a little bit so that it's biased over to the right. So get yourself to be rocked over to the right. And start to oscillate. And let your head roll to the right. So stay to the right. And oscillate. Letting your left hip joint be the one that thrusts. So oscillate up towards your head. Rock that pelvis. That's an oscillation. Not a side to side, right? But kind of jelly pudding. There you go. Rest for a moment. So Moshe's setting up a demand that I think is actually hard to feel. That's why I brought the skeleton. Come on up and see the skeleton again. I wish that this guy really had good hips and he's bolted, so he's not going to show it so well. But basically this is the position, right? The knee is crossed, hanging out to the side. And then you are rocked over this way. When you're rocked over this way, this hip comes off of the ground a little bit. Now if I want this hip joint to feed through, to go to the head, it has to do a couple of things. And he asks in this lesson for you to feel both of these components. It's a pretty high level idea to ask for, but maybe if I show you with the skeleton, you'll get the idea. Okay, look at the skeleton. You got to come close because he's little. I have a mini skeleton. You cannot see the hip joint, so you have to come. I don't want, you don't have to see. You can stay. But it might help you, so I'm asking you to see. Okay, so if we look, when we tilt the socket, it's all about where the socket is, right? The socket goes there. So if I take this hip, sorry for those of you listening to this and not seeing the skeleton, but if I just thrust up, right, it's going to hit a little bit of the cup. It's going to translate through, for sure, but it's not well seated. It's not like into it, right? And it's going to maybe create arthritis over time, a total hip replacement over time, maybe bursitis, who knows, right? Maybe none of that. Maybe you could live your whole life doing that and be fine, who knows. But the hip joint does another thing, which is a rotary component, right? So there's a rotary component as well as an up component. So when it's really seating well, it does both. It goes tong, 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 tong. And I'm exaggerating so you can see it. But that's what makes it. And if you're a runner, you know that. Because nobody wins like Charlie Chaplin, right? If I'm duck-footed, you can't really run well. You don't seat the hip. So I show you that. You all know that, right? Stand like this. And I jog or I attempt to run. Now, ballet dancers exploit that. But they learn to not seat the hip and do it anyway because they're on point and all that. But just imagine I'm running a race. I'm not really going to get a lot. If I'm very duck-footed or walking like Charlie Chaplin, I'm not really going to get a lot of forward momentum, right? So in terms of forward momentum, there is this like, dong, right? That, and then, boom, right? That's the thrust that gets you forward momentum, whether it's leaping or running or even walking. We have a certain amount of that in walking. So Moshe asks in this lesson, when you're in this configuration, that you start to visualize, imagine, feel, if you can feel it, that when you're like this and you're thrusting, that there's both that upward component and the rotary component, and he asks you to feel the rotary, feel the up, even though they're both happening at the same time. You really can't completely make one or the other. They're simultaneously things, but see if you can use your attention. And then the next variation is we'll just lift this arm, which just sends you a little bit more over. Okay, so let's go back. You're going to stand your knees. You're going to take your right ankle over your left knee. And then let everything tilt a little bit to the right. Good. Now lift your left arm. Let your head roll to the right a little bit too. Lift your left arm and let the palm face the face. The elbow can be a little bit bent if you want, but the palm kind of drips down to the face. And oscillate yourself. So you're lifting your left shoulder blade off the ground a little bit. Right, that's the idea there. So you're kind of canted all over onto the right. Yeah, that's in your... I know, sorry, easier said than done, isn't it? Yeah. Uh-huh. And you're seeing, how does that left hip do both the upward thrust, feel that a little bit, and the rotary thrust? So right there, you're just rotating, 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 but a lot of that is not passing up to your head. We basically want the oscillatory motion, not so much turning the pelvis. You leave the pelvis turned, you leave it there, and then you thrust in that plane. That's it. That's it. Yep. And then this is in the air. Yeah. That's it. That's more like it. Yeah. Interesting idea, huh? It's work. You got to come out of it and rest because it's some work. It tells you a little bit how your left leg and your left hip can operate, though. It's sort of like a litmus test, like how well does the left side seat and how well do I get thrust? We all do it better on one side versus the other, for sure. Okay. We'll come back to that, but just take a rest. So let's try the other side now. So you're going to bend both knees. You're going to cross the left ankle over the right. You're going to tilt everything a little bit over to the left, including your head. Roll your head a little bit to the left. You're going to raise your right arm towards the ceiling so that the shoulder blade comes off a little bit, everything to the left, and then you're making like a little thrust idea. Yes. That's nice. Nice and relaxed. Yeah. It's just easy that way. Maybe you just know what you're doing. Very easy that way for you. Yeah, it's like a piece of cake. That's the hip that works better. That's the one that works better. Yeah. Wow. Big difference. So she's going to the other side and going, can I change my other side to work as good, right? Which is fine. You can go back and forth a little bit. That's a lot of that in this lesson is back and forth. Resting when you need. So when you need, please rest. Go back to the original one, which was your, your right ankle over your left knee and everything tilted over towards the right, left arm up. See if you can really keep the face placid and oscillate using the left hip. Now, you may have to put the foot in a good place. You know, maybe the foot has to figure out where it can thrust. If the foot's in the wrong place, I don't care how good your hip is, it's going to affect the idea of its seating. So feel free to maybe put your foot in a place that you like. Yeah. And Patty's doing something that we're going to do. She's using her heel. She's brilliant. We're going to do that in a few minutes. Yeah. Okay. Rest for a moment. Yeah. It's work, huh? Come on in. Yeah. Yeah. You could. Okay, let's put the soles of the feet together. So you're laying there with the soles of the feet and your knees will be wide out to the side if you can. There you go. In this position, it's possible to oscillate. In this position, you're just a different weight bearing on your feet. You may need to feel how close your feet need to be. If you put them too close, you don't have any play. If you put them too far away, you don't have any power. So it's like there's some sort of happy in between where you can feel, oh, right there is good for me. You know, there you go. Now, if you want to bias one foot, like say we want the right foot to do the work, can you place the left foot on top of the right? Try and let the left completely be passive and make the right foot and the right hip do all the thrusting. Uh-huh. Left leg completely passive. The left joint, hip joint is moving, but passively. You're still having the acetabulum socket or cup rotating around the hip joint, but it's passive because the right's doing all the work. Good, rest for a moment. Elongate your leg. Sometimes that's hard for people to lay with the knees apart and spread. Come back to that position if you can and put the right foot on top of the left. So now that the right is completely passive, let the right one just hang and let the left do the motion. That's it. Can you really let that right groin, inner thigh, hang? Shut it down. Let the other leg take over. Yeah. That's a hanging groin. Good, good. And now put both feet, just sole to sole, and do it with both feet. At this point, Moshe would have probably told a sexual joke, but I'm not going to. Okay, elongate your legs.
I close my ears.
You close your ears. Yeah, he would have come up with some good story. He has lots of good ones. His mind never strayed far from that. Good rest, everything. There you go. Now, let's do a variation now with the feet flat on the floor and your knees bent. I'd like you to lift your pelvis up in the air. A couple times, just feel how you do that. You press through the feet, and you get it up there, and you slowly, one vertebra at a time, lower it down. So let's practice just lifting the pelvis up a few times. Just feel. Lift it up in the air. Up, 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 up. So that eventually the weight goes to your shoulder blades. Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, like I think in Pilates they call it pelvic peel. Okay. Rest for a moment. You're going to oscillate with your pelvis up in the air. So you're going to lift it to a distance that's comfortable. And then you're going to really let your knees go away from your head and towards your head, and you'll oscillate. Your pelvis isn't going to move up and down so much. It's kind of going to stay in that plane, and you're going to almost like thrust along the plane of your knees. It's fixed in a very different situation. So, yeah, hold on for a minute. Okay, let's go ahead and watch someone. A minute, and we'll do it both ways. Can we watch you? Okay, so a couple things. Just put yourself down for a second. A couple things to make this helpful for yourself. It's like, where should the feet be? Now, her feet may be perfect if she's going to keep her pelvis on the ground, but as her pelvis comes up, it's like, are they where they need to be at the end movement, right? So just go ahead and bring your pelvis up. See how she just course corrected her feet, right? It's like, and there, are they even where she wants them to be for maximum power? I don't know. What if you move them a little closer? Does that make it easier? Any difference?
Yeah,
a little bit more pressure on my knee. A little bit. Oh, so you don't like that. So she's doing something because she has to protect her knee, right? So she's doing something which is very valid. There she can take it, right? However, skeletally, if she didn't have an issue, there is one place where your feet are at your maximum height because you're going to be pushing and pulling through your feet. So where should they be, right? So there she is, and she's sort of, can you oscillate? Is your knee okay? Or maybe she, there you go. So her pelvis is kind of staying in the same plane. Can you make your pelvis go up and down? Up and down, up. And that's excess movement. We don't want that. Doink, doink. That's just like, all of a sudden it's like you want a force to do that, and all of a sudden you're taking a detour. We're taking a detour, right? We don't want any detour. We want clean, back and forth. So wherever you put your pelvis, just keep it there and think that the movement is along this plane to the top of your head. Okay? Yeah. And sometimes you can think of your knees advancing away from your head. Pull it, like as if I could pull your knees. You know, you feel that? Pull, pull, pull. Yeah, uh-huh. And there's a thrust and a pull, but you can really feel the knees advancing. Good. Rest for a moment. Let's do the following after you rest. I'm going to say it, but just do it when you're ready. You're going to bind your knees and your feet together, so close, like the inner thighs are touching. And then you're going to lift up, and you're going to lift the toes a little bit so you're on your heels, and you're going to oscillate like that. So it's like you're pressing through your heels. Your pelvis is going to be up in the air, and you're pressing through the heels. Now, as you do that, slowly bring your arms overhead so that the arms rest, elbows can be bent, the arms rest overhead, and continue. doing that. It's tiring, so you may have to take a rest. Yeah, rest that out. Ah, good. Let's do something on the roller to see if it helps that. So can everybody grab a roller? Come to the ballet bar with your roller. Actually, there's one or two more in the bag. Let's just look at our heels dropping down. So you're going to put your roller, if you have a breakfast bar or a wall, just put your roller against the wall. You're going to step on it. Just step your arches right on it. And then it's very simple. All we're going to do is we're going to drop the heels, and we're just going to let the heels stretch down. As the roller rolls backwards, we drop the heels. And then we can bend the knees a little bit and roll the roller forwards back onto our arches. So simple, right? Just dropping the heels. And feel, is there one calf? It's really different than another. Maybe one foot goes Charlie Chaplin-ish. It outturns, it duckfoots, and the other doesn't. There's all sorts of differences in our feet. And you can just sort of play with how you angle your feet and how you like that, how you counterbalance. And really dropping down into there and really letting that heel elongate. You can, once you get there, you can bend one knee forward and really elongate one. And then you can switch. Bend the other knee forward and elongate the other heel. It's a little bit like walking, but on a big hill. So that you're alternately stretching one and then the other. Does that feel okay for everybody? Dropping the heel. Good, and maybe step off. Just take a moment. Feel, it'll change the quality of your standing when you get that idea of dropping the heel. When you have a lot of tightness in your lower back, you also have tightness in the calf. And when the heels drop, the low back tends to be freer. Okay, let's go back to that last variation where our arms were over our head, your feet were together, your knees were together, and you were oscillating via thrusting through the heels only and pulling, push-pulling through the heels. Your pelvis is in the air and you push-pull through the heels. See if it's easier now that we've elongated the heels a little bit. See if that gives you a little more sense of that. I know this is kind of a hard variation. Uh-huh. Good. Now let that go for a moment and just spread your knees a little bit. Spread your feet. Bend them. Bend them up. There you go. Just bend them up. Put them hip distance apart. Just keep your arms overhead if you can. And don't lift your pelvis or anything. Just oscillate. Go to the first movement that we were cultivating. Just oscillate. Just oscillate. Push, pull, push, pull, push, pull, push, pull, push, pull. Bop, ba, la, la, bop. Let your head be free. Put your arms directly out to the side, palms up, oscillate there. Put your hands down by your side, palms down, oscillate there. Let your head be free. Jelly pudding. Bop, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and the legs doing all the work. Good, and let go of it all and just rest on your back. Feel the connection all the way from your heel to your hip. And all the way from the other heel to the hip. Knowing that you have a big ball that seats way deep inside into that socket. Go ahead and bring yourself to upright standing. And feel your balance when you get upright. Feel if you have any breath in your lower back when you stand. Feel if you can feel the connection of your heel to your hip and your other heel to your hip. and where your hips are location wise in you. And then walk a little bit and just continue. Maybe you feel a little of that thrust, maybe you feel a little of the rotary motion. There's more than that that happens in walking, but maybe you can have a sense of your hips. Really efficient walking tends to be like the Indians, you know, where they're sneaky and they're quiet. But what happens when you can see an efficiency in walking? If we had wet footprints, they go away from being wide. Everyone walk really wide like a duck, like maybe like pregnant women sometimes walk, you know, or try to, right? You can tell that's not efficient, right? That's not efficient. It starts to go away from that and it narrows and you get a little more straight ahead and your base of support or your footprints narrow and narrow. They don't walk one in front of each other unless you have to because our hips have a certain distance. But our footprints end up being the hip distance apart. And the hip distance is not out here. It's narrower. It's in there. Okay. Good. Good, good. Finished on hips. I hope it felt good. See you next time.
That one.